May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all.
And upon you too.
Yeah.
You know, today we're really opening the vault to look at a foundational text.
Hmm.
It's a speech well over a century old, but it just cuts right to the heart of what a true spiritual life looks like. This is a deep dive into genuine piety.
Absolutely. We are looking at an incredibly powerful address from the promised Messiah, Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad.
Right.
It was delivered back at the annual convention in Qadian, December 25th, 1897. And the topic, an exhortation on righteousness, is, well, it's what we know as taqwa.
And for any curious learner, anyone trying to really understand the architecture of faith, this is just, it's essential listening. Our mission today is to figure out why this ethical blueprint feels so urgent even now.
What's the core message?
The promised Messiah's core assertion was, you know, simple but so powerful. Nothing, absolutely nothing, pleases God the Exalted more than piety and righteousness.
So it seems like this was more than just a general sermon. It feels very specific, like an instruction for the community that was right there in front of him.
It was.
What was the main thing he needed them to grasp right then and there?
The main thesis is that just showing up isn't enough. Association with the divinely commissioned person, it's not some kind of spiritual shield.
Right.
It actually necessitates the complete, total adoption of true righteousness. I mean, in other words, you say you're on board, you've basically signed a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And that contract requires a deep, authentic, internal transformation.
So why is this idea of taqwa, this righteousness, so important that it's almost like a requirement for membership?
Because it's the ultimate remedy. It's the comprehensive cure. He explicitly says that taqwa is the medicine for every single kind of internal decay.
Every kind.
All of it. We're talking about malice, that deep-seated rancor, the sin of associating partners with God, which can be obvious or very hidden, and maybe most critically, just being completely attached to the world.
Mm.
Without actively embracing this remedy, he warned, there's just no cure for the spiritual diseases that plague a person's heart.
Okay, let's unpack that idea of internal decay. The speech uses this really stark analogy, doesn't it? About sin starting small, like a physical blemish.
Yes, and it's an analogy that is designed to stick with you. He asks us to imagine a physical blemish, you know, a small black spot on your skin.
Right.
Even if it's tiny, it causes this profound apprehension, doesn't it? You worry almost obsessively that it might spread, that it could corrupt and cover your entire body.
Yeah, you'd rush to find a remedy before it takes hold.
Exactly. And sin, even what seems like a minor trespass, is a spiritual blemish that blackens the heart. The danger isn't the single act.
It's the attitude towards
it. It's the disregard for that minor blemish. That's the steering mechanism that directs an individual toward greater, more devastating evil. It's that subtle lie we tell ourselves that a small compromise won't matter.
Until it's disfigured your entire self.
Wow.
And that makes the next part of the speech, the focus on God's potential wrath, make so much more sense. It isn't arbitrary punishment. It's a reaction to hypocrisy.
That is the crucial insight. God is overwhelmingly merciful, but his fury is provoked when he sees a profound disconnect. A disconnect between what a community claims.
These are tall claims.
The grand claims about its faith and devotion and what their practical day-to-day state actually is. Their actions, their dealings, their inner lives. When that's the total opposite of their words, that contradiction is what draws divine displeasure.
And this is where he brings in the historical evidence, which is so compelling. He talks about these devastating defeats of Muslims by others, specifically mentioning Genghis Khan and Hulagu Khan.
Yeah.
I mean, these were crushing defeats that on the surface seemed to contradict earlier divine promises of protection for the believers.
And that raises a really serious question, doesn't it? How can a community that claims divine protection, a community that recites, "There is none worthy of worship except Allah," suffer such a humiliating catastrophe?
So what was the reason he gave? What was the explanation for those defeats?
He laid the blame squarely on internal spiritual corruption. He said that, you know, while their lips were reciting the pure words of faith, their hearts were just completely disposed to worldly interests.
Their actions didn't match.
Not at all. Their deeds were purely worldly. They had this huge, unbridgeable gulf between their words and their actions. And that chasm is what aroused wrath.
So the demand of taqwa really just boils down to this absolute harmony between your inner self and your outer self. You have to constantly check if your words and actions actually line up.
Precisely. A person could say the most beautiful prayers, but if their heart is impure, they won't find favor with God. In fact, that That performance, that contradiction, is the very thing that incites divine wrath.
And he told his followers they came to him so he could plant a seed.
To transform them into a fruitful tree. But that process means you have to tear out the weeds of inconsistency first.
And this all leads to that profound example of the holy prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, before the Battle of Badr. Victory was promised. It was basically a done deal. Yet he was weeping and praying all night. I've always found that a bit confusing.
It's a key lesson.
If the promise is sealed, why the intense prayer?
That's the lesson. It demonstrates God's self-sufficiency. When he was asked about it, the prophet said, God is self-sufficient. What he's teaching us is that even when a divine promise seems absolute, there are often hidden conditions just beneath the surface.
And that condition is righteousness, the state of the heart.
It's always the state of the heart. He wasn't praying for the promise to be fulfilled. He was praying that the community would meet the hidden conditions needed for that promise to stick.
So God doesn't need our empty words.
He doesn't. He cares about the genuine, pure state of our hearts. That intense prayer of Badr was the prophet showing the highest possible level of human effort and spiritual fear, reminding everyone that humility is required, even when success seems guaranteed.
Okay, so we've covered the necessity of taqwa and the warnings. Let's pivot now to the tangible blessings it offers in this life. If I dedicate myself to this, what can I realistically expect here and now?
The conversation shifts immediately to security. Real, tangible security. One of the clearest signs of piety is that God frees a righteous person from the unpleasant, grinding pressures of this world.
He takes over their affairs.
He assumes the role of guardian over their affairs. And this isn't some reward in the distant future. It's an immediate management system.
And that links directly to that famous Quranic promise. And he who fears Allah, he will make for him an out and will provide for him from where he expects not.
That verse is the whole package. It's a dual promise. The first part is deliverance from affliction, making an out, a way to escape hardship.
And the second?
The second is provision from sources you could never have anticipated. It's reassurance for the person trying to live justly in a world that so often seems to reward injustice.
And that idea of provision, it's about more than just money, right? It's about protecting your integrity. Which brings us to that famous shopkeeper example in the speech.
It's the perfect illustration. Think of a shopkeeper, a small business owner, who genuinely believes their business can't survive without a bit of falsehood, a little deception. They feel that lying is just a necessary cost of doing business.
That pressure is everywhere today. I mean, in corporate settings, legal gray areas, even just building a convincing social media brand, there's this constant feeling that if you don't compromise, you just can't compete.
Precisely. And the speech calls that feeling of necessity completely unjustified. Righteousness, taqwa, becomes your safeguard. God actually intervenes. He becomes your protector. And he saves you from those specific situations that would otherwise force you to lie just to survive.
So your provision comes through honest means instead.
Exactly. And on the flip side, if the promise is protection when you have taqwa, what's the consequence when someone just abandons Allah?
There's a clear consequence.
It's an undeniable spiritual progression. When a person deliberately abandons God, God forsakes them. And when the merciful God leaves, there's a vacuum. Satan inevitably develops a relationship with them. It's a stark reminder that you're never just neutral. You're always moving toward one pole or the other.
But the positive promise of reliance is the powerful counterbalance to that warning. And he who puts his trust in Allah, he is sufficient for him.
That trust is everything. And that assurance that God is sufficient was given in a very specific context. The verse was initially for people whose entire focus was on religious progress.
Right.
They consciously left their worldly affairs to God, confident he'd manage them better. And it's that total surrender that earns his immediate support.
So that's the material and physical security. But the final part of the speech goes even higher, into these extraordinary spiritual heights. What about spiritual provision?
This is where we move from earthly needs to divine insight. The speech emphasizes that spiritual provision is granted to the righteous, a level of knowledge and understanding that is far, far superior to any formal education.
And the ultimate example of this is, of course, the Holy Prophet.
Of course.
The speech highlights that despite being unlettered, he was so blessed with this divine insight that he prevailed over the entire world, the people of the book, the most sophisticated philosophers, the top scholars of his day. He rectified their errors.
It shows that taqwa unlocks a different source of knowledge. It's not book learning. It's a light granted directly from God. And this preferred light leads to the highest honor a human can get, the rank of a saint or friend of God, a wali.
That's an immense rank to achieve. The Quranic basis for it is so beautiful, meaning the saints of Allah the Exalted, that is, the friends of God, are those who are righteous.
I mean, think about it. Today, people swell with pride if some powerful ruler or a famous official calls them a friend.
A temporary honor.
Totally temporary, totally earthly. Now, imagine how infinitely superior, how truly eternal the honor is when Allah the Exalted himself deems you his saint and friend. It's the ultimate title.
And this journey reaches its absolute climax in a promise from a hadith in Bukhari. This is the ultimate description of nearness. It's not just friendship, it's complete integration.
It is. We have to spend time on this. This is the peak of spiritual aspiration. It goes beyond just getting gifts from God. It promises to fuse a person's faculties with the divine will.
It's the most profound statement on what true nearness looks like.
It is. Allah the Exalted states that through specific, dedicated practice, a friend of mine gets so near to me that I become the ears with which he hears, I become the eyes with which he sees, I become the hands with which he grasps, I become the feet with which he walks.
I mean, that's just staggering. Every sense, every action is perfected and guided by God. The person becomes a channel for divine goodness on earth.
Exactly. It means you no longer listen to malice, you no longer see impure things, you only walk towards good. But crucially, the hadith adds a practical reward. When this person asks of God, he grants their wish. When they seek refuge, he grants it. They're given a spiritual power that matches their purity.
What an incredible journey through this speech. We started with the inner need to root out that spiritual blemish of sin, recognizing that taqwa is the only cure for that internal corruption.
Then we saw how that translates into real-world security, saving the shopkeeper from having to lie to survive, and ensuring provision comes from honest, unexpected places.
And finally, we saw it's the pathway to supreme spiritual provision, divine insight, the rank of a saint, and that profound nearness where God guides your every sense. The essential message is just constant self-examination.
Using the Quran is the unmoving criterion. It's about making sure the outward claim of our faith truly, truly aligns with the inner state of our heart.
To eradicate that dangerous disconnect that caused so many problems in the past.
Exactly.
For you, the listener, we'll leave you with this final provocative thought. That highest promise we discussed of God becoming the senses of a righteous person is explicitly attained not just through what's required, but through voluntary worship.
So what does it truly mean to restructure your life and your devotion so that your every sense and action is guided by the divine will? And maybe more practically, what small voluntary act of devotion, a hidden sacrifice, a private moment of reflection, could you start today to actively seek that transformative nearness?